Failed States, The Abuse of Power and the Assault on Democracy. Author, Noam Chomsky. The selection of issues that should rank high on the agenda of concern for human welfare and rights is naturally a subjective matter, but there are a few choices that seem unavoidable, because they bear so directly on the prospects for decent survival. Among them are at least these three: nuclear war, environmental disaster, and the fact that the government of the world's leading power is acting in ways that increase the likelihood of these catastrophes. It is important to stress that the government, because the population, not surprisingly, doesn't agree. That brings up a fourth issue that should deeply concern Americans and the world: the sharp divide between public opinion and public policy, one of the reasons for the fear, which cannot casually be put aside, that the American system, as a whole, is in real trouble, that it is heading in a direction that spells the end of the historic values of equality, liberty, and meaningful democracy. The system is coming to have some of the features of failed states, to adopt a currently fashionable notion that is conventionally applied to states regarded as potential threats to our security, like Iraq, or as needing no intervention to rescue the population from severe internal threats, like Haiti. Though the concept is recognized to be frustratingly imprecise, some of the primary characteristics of failed states can be identified. One is their inability or unwillingness to protect their citizens from violence, and perhaps even destruction. Another is their tendency to regard themselves as beyond the reach of domestic or international law, and hence they are free to carry out aggression and violence. And if they have democratic forms, they suffer from a serious democratic deficit that deprives their formal democratic institutions of real substance. Among the hardest tasks that anyone can undertake, and one of the most important, is to look honestly in the mirror. If we allow ourselves to do so, we should have little difficulty in finding the characteristics of failed states right at home. That recognition of reality should be deeply troubling to those who care about their countries and future generations. And we say countries in plural, because of the enormous reach of US power, and also because of the threats that are not localized in space or time. Stark, dreadful, and inescapable. The world has not renounced war. Quite the contrary. By now, the world's hegemonic power accords itself the right to wage war at will, under a doctrine of anticipatory self-defenses, with unstated bounds. International law, treaties, and rules of world order are sternly imposed on others with much self-righteous posturing, but are dismissed as irrelevant for the United States, a long-standing practice driven to new depths by Reagan and Bush II administrations. Risking ultimate doom. The risk of nuclear destruction is not abstract. We have already come close to the brink of nuclear war. The best-known case is the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1962, when our escape from nuclear oblivion was nothing short of miraculous, two prominent researchers conclude. At a retrospective conference in Havana 2002, historian and Kennedy advisor Arthur Schlesinger described the crisis as the most dangerous moment in human history. Participants at the conference learned that the dangers were even more severe than they had believed. They discovered that the world was one word away from the first use of nuclear weapons since Nagasaki, as reported by Thomas Blanton of the National Security Archive, which helped organize the conference. The Law of People. The Law of People was introduced by John Rawls, America's leading late 20th century political and moral philosopher. In his latest work, he argues that the law should be appropriate for the society of liberal democratic peoples and the society of deem peoples. The latter, not liberal democracies, but with characteristics that render them admissible to just an international community. Outside the realm of these well-ordered peoples, Rawls says, are outlaw states that refuse to comply with the law of peoples. The law of peoples includes the commitments to observe treaties and undertakings, to recognize that all are equal and parties to the agreements that bind them, to reject the use of force for the reason other than self-defense, and to honor human rights along with other principles that should be readily accepted, though not by outlaw states and their acolytes. Illegal but legitimate. The hideous crimes of the 20th century led to dedicated efforts to save humans from the curse of war. The word save is no exaggeration. It has been clear ever since 1945 that the likelihood of ultimate doom is much higher than any rational person should be willing to tolerate. These efforts to end war led to a broad consensus on the principles that should guide state action, formulated in the United Nations Charter, which in the United Nations is the supreme law of the land. The Charter opens by expressing the determination of the signatories to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought untold sorrow to mankind. The scourge of war had threatened not just untold sorrow, but total destruction, as all the participants knew but refrained from mentioning. The words atomic and nuclear do not appear in the charter. Democracy promotion abroad. The promotion of democracy is central to the George W. Bush administration's prosecution of both the war on terrorism and its overall grand strategy. And so begins the most extensive scholarly article on the roots of the Bush doctrine. The statement is unsurprising. By 2005, it had reached the level of ritual. In scholarship, we routinely read the conviction that democracy can be imposed from the outside. Is the assumption driving America's intervention in Iraq, and has been posited as a potential new pillar of ambition for U.S. foreign policy elsewhere. The pronouncement is sometimes amplified. Promoting democracy abroad has been a primary goal of U.S. foreign policy ever since Woodrow Wilson endowed it with the powerful idealist element. It gained particular salience under Ronald Reagan, and then was taken up with unprecedented forcefulness under Bush II. In journalism and commentary, the assumption is taken to the merest truism. Democracy promotion at home. The concept of democracy promotion at home may seem odd or even absurd. After all, the United States was the first modern, more or less democratic society, and has been a model for others ever since. And in many dimensions, crucial for authentic democracy, protection of freedom of speech, for example, it has become a leader among the societies of the world. There are, however, quite good reasons for concern. The concern is not unfamiliar. The most prominent scholar who concentrates on democratic theory and practice, Robert Dahl, has written on seriously undemocratic features of the U.S. political system, proposing modifications. Thomas Ferguson's Investment Theory of Politics is a searching critique of deeper institutional factors that sharply restrict functioning democracy. The U.S. and democratic deficit. No one familiar with history should be surprised that growing democratic deficit in the United States is accompanied by declaration of messianic missions to bring democracy to a suffering world. Declarations of noble intent by systems of power are rarely complete fabrication, and the same is true in this case. Under some conditions, forms of democracy are indeed acceptable. Abroad, we find a strong line of continuity. Democracy is acceptable if and only if it is consistent with strategic and economic interests. In modified form, the doctrine holds at home as well.